Welcome to the New Fat Endurance Podcast. Oh. I nearly forgot what to say again.
You haven't been here for a while. It's okay. You've been on holiday.
You panicked me. I'm back.
You're back.
Back from the land of thoughts. That's Greece, isn't it? Everyone's just had a thought there in the past and written it down, called it philosophy.
Yeah, it's quite a nice place to... It's not reflected in worse places.
I believe, yeah. When I got there, I was like, this is Rob Jones's homeland.
You were actually in the place...
You own it.
You were very close to... Actually, you were in exactly the same place that we were last time when we went in September.
When you ran for far too long across the country.
Yeah, far too long for far too many days and spent some relaxing time. You are in the location where I witnessed Jeff try and swim in a straight line and ended up doing a complete circle back around to me because he could only breathe in one side at the time. And... Yeah.
Was it cold when you were there in the sea?
The sea, no, it was refreshing. It wasn't warm, but it wasn't cold. Was it cold now?
Yeah, I'd say it was straight up pretty cold.
Wetsuit legal.
Wetsuit legal. We're getting quite far ahead of ourselves. We should just, you've got on, what are you wearing today? Rincon fours?
Rincon threes that have paint splatters. I use them, the Paint your house approved.
Solid, mate. You're so sponsored. You have shoes for painting your house. That's legit.
Do you know what? These are the ones, though, that I don't like them for running in, but for relaxing in.
You're happy.
I'm happy. For painting?
For painting, okay.
As long as your feet aren't tied into them and they have freedom to move, these ones are okay for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I know the ones. And Precision Fuel and Hydration. Head to our show notes. There's a link in there. Hit the link, and that is your route to a discount code. For Hoka, go and try them on. We always say, people always ask, which shoes should I try? I'm always saying, go try them on.
Totally.
Dubai Mall, Mall of Emirates. Abu Dhabi has his own concept store now.
Correct.
They're everywhere.
Nige went to the Abu Dhabi concept store last week. If he was a lesser man, he would have looked at the marketing posters and gone, do you know what? Skyward X, I'm getting them. I've read the reviews. I've read the blurb. Fantastic. I want them.
Yeah.
He went and tried them on the shop. Did not like them at all. And so he stuck with the Clifton 9 and he loves them.
Nice.
But if he had just bought the shoe based on marketing without trying them on.
Yeah.
Or based off what maybe one of us had said.
Yeah.
He would be unhappy. He did the right thing.
I've ordered a set of Skyward X because I thought it was something to do with Emirates points.
I also have done exactly the same thing and ordered a pair. We'll see how... Well, interesting to get a review of them. And now that they're here and landed in store, we should get them very soon.
Yeah. Back to your homeland.
Greece.
Now, I looked at where Sparta is compared to... I think, mate, you ran a long way.
It's all the way across the country. It's far too far.
Greece is huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had absolutely no idea. All I knew of Greece, and this might sound quite basic. Obviously, I know the Stoics, good guys. But modern day Greece,
good guys.
All I can remember is watching the news back in the UK. Was it like 2004 or 2005 time?
And
all the banks crashed and everyone was herded around ATMs and they couldn't get their money. So I expected to show up. Now, I did see a lot of ATMs, which I kind of expected.
You were looking for them.
But... yeah, I just kept saying to Marcus, like, wow, this place is amazing.
Mm.
Coastline. Well, we're obviously on the coast. Coastline, the mountains. Like, well done, Greece. Fair play to you.
Because you fly into Athens, which, I mean, Athens Airport isn't really in Athens, but you're not in the city, but you're close. You're on the outskirts.
Yeah.
The outskirts of the city where the coast is.
Well, there's a mountain range between you and the airport, I learned.
Oh, yes. And you see sort of boat yards everywhere.
Yeah.
Along the coastline, there's so many nice restaurants, so many nice cafes, health bars.
Yeah.
It's kind of gone up market, apparently, in the last few years.
Nice to know. So, yeah, 30 minutes from the airport, I found myself in Voulagmeni.
Say it again.
Voulagmeni.
Voulagmeni.
That's it, isn't it?
I think so.
We'll go with it. We'll go with it. Which was where Xterra Greece was happening.
Xterra Greece. Now, I think the backstory is interesting. Yes, people know that me and Marcus were there in September and we met the organizer of the race, but how that came about is quite interesting.
Anastasios. Who's like the unofficial mayor of the town.
Yeah, he's like a local physio. He seems to know everybody.
Yeah. Two brothers, they organized the race. So, Mulvaneau last year, where the World Championships were, we're after the race, stood in a bike wash queue. It's cold, shivering. I had insight to bring a jumper along. So I'm okay, but you know me, I get cold pretty easy, right? So I'm still
blue lips.
Still got a bit of a shiver going on. And it's a good hour before we're going to get our bikes washed. But you can't stick your bike away being stinking, so there's no option really. Anyway, this Greek god in front of me is standing there with his tri-suit on, but rolled down, so just his shorts, and just topless, standing around, chatting to everybody and anybody. And anyway, I was directly behind him, and after a while, he turned and started talking to me, and he basically said, like, this course is ridiculous. And then he said, Greece is far better. And I'm like, ah, you're from Greece, I assume. He's like, yes. And I was like, what makes the Greece course better? And he basically said, well, I organize it. So I was like, okay. So then we started chatting more and more, and he was telling me about the course and why it's better and the sort of technical parts to it, and the weather's really good, and it's where the Olympics were held in Athens 2004 Olympics. And by the end of the conversation, I was like, all right, I'm in. So I then re-pitched his pitch to Marcus, who I think he even booked into the race before I did. And then we stuck it in the back of the closet until about a month ago, when we were like, oh yeah, it's that Greece race in a bit. But you guys also went over and met him as well, didn't you?
Went over and met him. He was crewing somebody for the race that I did. So he would just pop up randomly mid-race. Always find me, always give me a high five, run with me for a few hundred meters.
Yeah.
And then vanish
again.
That kind of guy. I think he's the sort of guy, when you WhatsApp him, he's never any more than 5 minutes away from wherever you may be.
Like a rat in London.
Yeah. He just pops up. Oh, I'm there. Yeah. How?
So his hospitality, but I mean, not just sort of towards us, but to everybody, was insane. Like he would walk through the sort of town with us, and he's got three kids, little ones, and everyone knows him. Him and his brothers, they own the company Try More, I think it's called, and they organized 70.3 there, this race and another race. They obviously just, everyone loves them because they obviously bring a lot of tourists to the place, and all the volunteers, and we'll get into the race, but like everyone seemed to just want to give to the event, which is quite rare at endurance events, I think, or generally for volunteers at races. There's always a few who are like uber excited to be there, but a lot of them have just been told to sit there or stand there, you know, stick your arm out, make sure no one goes the wrong way. And after a few hours, they normally just leave their point anyway and stop caring. That's definitely what happens in the UK. But at this race, like everybody was just so keen to help you all the time. It was very, very good.
The course. I was just looking at the races that are available in this. You have a full distance triathlon, a sprint distance triathlon, a full distance aquathon, which is a 1500 swim and a 10K run, or a sprint distance aquathon, which is half the swim and a 5K run. The course grading, the swims are either easy or intermediate. I don't know how you can make an intermediate swim.
If it's one lap's easy, two is hard.
The bike they grade is intermediate, and the run also intermediate, unless you do the 5K run, which is apparently difficult.
Yeah, so they changed the course. This website is not correct.
Fully accurate.
We asked him. So I think you did a bit of the course last year.
Yeah, we went and had a look at where. So you come out of the swim, you collect your bike. I guess you do a bit of a flat section, but the mountain base is across the road effectively, isn't it? That's where it starts to kick up on tarmac.
Right.
The tarmac ends, yeah. The trail begins.
Okay, so they changed that. They sent us a bit further down the road. So it was like 1K or so on flats. And then we went up, and really up. So you hit this piece of road and the incline goes to about 22% for about 30-40 meters, And then you come around the corner and it's like still probably double figures up to a set of steps where you have to hop off and then run up the steps with your bike to get on top to the trails. Then so the old way, I think, brought you up a route, like a road route that you could drive up to get up access to the trails.
That's where we went to.
So now they've sent you up a walking route,
which is the bins.
Steeper. Yeah. Steeper, contains steps. And then you're up on top of the mountain range, and then you go and then you start your lap. So you do 2 15K laps. Each lap had 400 meters of climbing in. So you do 800 total over 30K.
And the run course is fairly similar as well, isn't it?
The run course matched the exact, yeah, pretty much the same. You went up the side of a mountain, essentially, a trail, a walking trail that took you up. You couldn't really run up it. It was like power hike. And again, you're doing it like 25, 28% on the side of this hill. And you do two lots of those within a 5K loop. So you do that basically, yeah, there's four times where you're power hiking instead of running. And then obviously you get to run the downhills, and then it's a flat run in towards the finish as well. But it's a bit cruel at the finish. They send you through like a softer floor, like forest area, before you hit the beach, and then you have to run along the whole beach while everyone's sort of relaxing, having their shots of ouzo or whatever. You run along the beach on the softer sand.
So when you're at your most fatigued,
yeah,
you're on the soft sand for the exactly. sprint finish.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, there was no sprinting to finish. Not from me anyway.
And what's the vibe of the race like? 'Cause I mean, I've been to one of these that was poorly attended, so it was very, 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 very different. But is the vibe very different from a traditional swim, bike, run, road triathlon?
Yeah, I think this is what I'm kind of learning now. This is my fourth Xterra race.
So you've done Oman twice,
yeah,
Italy,
yeah,
and Greece.
And then Greece. And yeah, I think you can't really compare Oman because it's only like 50 people there. But so road triathlon is all about details and people just making each other nervous. Mm. So that's the way I would describe it. So, you know, aero helmets, chain lube, making sure that every little intricate detail you stress over. And yeah, there's a lot more people. You know, you're going to race with like 2,000 other people at an Ironman, let's say. Or maybe it was just the way I was in it, or the people that I was around when in it, but it was all detail focused and constantly like, if, for example, someone said, oh, they've, you know, that cone in the rule book's meant to be 50 meters from there, but it's 60, they'd open a Facebook group about it and start discussing it, you know? That kind of vibe, which, it's like, it's herd mentality, isn't it? If everyone sort of gets as detailed like that, then everyone else wants to do it. Whereas these Xterra races, and I think it's because it's more like mountain bikers, trail runners, like it's just relaxed. Mm. You know, like they basically like, there will be a course, just show up in the morning when the gun goes, start, and we'll help you figure it out for the rest of the way. No one is like, obviously, and also you can draft, so no one's stressed about drafting. There's less people in the race, so you're not worried about sort of making it first into a corner or anything like that. It's just a lot more relaxed, and it makes me think, you know, the more you can approach the other stuff like this, the way more fun it is. Yeah. So it's definitely a bit of a personal, like I'm discovering more like personal stuff, but also because I obviously coach a lot of people who do Ironmans, and then I'm watching a lot of other people at these races. I'm like, wow, there's a clear distinction between the two types of people here. Mm.
It's not to say that, you say it's quite relaxed, but it's not to say that anyone gives less on the day in terms of effort or intensity. People put themselves in the absolute bin.
It's a different style of race.
Yeah.
Right? Like you've got to be really good at going uber hard and staying really switched on. Because if you're not, especially in this kind of course, you're either climbing up like double figure percentage hills, or you're coming back down through like technical trail part. So there's no kind of switch off time either. And there's also a lot more unpredictability. So you can flat at any time, which you can do that in a road triathlon, but obviously when you're on trail and the kind of like hard rock that Greece was, you're sort of never safe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You can puncture at any time. You can snap your chain going uphill. Someone else can lose control and whack into you. You know, if you tried to sit and stress about all the variables that could happen, you wouldn't make the start line.
I guess it's the same with the run as well. You can trip, catch your foot on any section.
Yeah.
As opposed to road runs are quite, I would say, uneventful.
Yeah, a bit more predictable. Predictable. Probably.
That's probably a better word, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was going up behind someone and they stood on a rock that was not secure and it like flicked back down the mountain and like I just moved my foot out of the way and I was like, fuck, that could have broken my foot easily. But, you know, there's just a risk that you know happens with trail running, so you don't sort of stress on it. So I think the vibe is a lot different, and I hate the word vibe, but it is a lot more relaxed. The race starts at 10, we started at 10:45. So already it's being more relaxed. Whereas, you know, Ironman's your 6:30 sometimes, 7 a.m. So you've got to be there at 5 to get your prep sorted. You're obviously preparing to be out for the whole day. So your nutrition admin has to be next level. With these, it's like, have you got 2 gels for the bike? Have you got 2 gels for the run? Yep. Easy. 4 gels. Like, it's totally different ball game. Not to say that one is better than the other, but for sure, if you're someone who thrives more in relaxed conditions, then this kind of racing seems to be where that is at. If you're someone who wants to get every little bit out of yourself and your limit, then you're not going to get that at these sort of races, or you might get quite frustrated because, it is pretty unpredictable.
What was the swim like? Was that a mass start swim from the beach?
Mass start swim, yeah. And I found myself sort of going back to my old kind of ways of like, I need the perfect line. I need to start really well here. And then as we were about to go, three ladies just came and lined up in front of me, in front of like the start line of the boys. And I was like, what are they doing? And I like half of me wanted to like push through and be like, hey, come on. And then I was like, actually, maybe they're Uber swimmers.
Yeah.
And they're going to take off and I'm going to get a really good draft to the first boy here. Like, let's find out. They weren't Uber swimmers. I had to go around. But that's the kind of mindset that sort of shifts is like let's just see.
Yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, the swim, the first turn boy was a bit rough, but absolutely nothing like, you know, a first turn boy with 1,000 other people swimming around you. Mm. And then, so it was you swam out to a first boy, took a left, then you were doing a kind of triangle shape. And it was a 2-lap swim, so an Aussie exit in between. I think I came out the first lap sort of top, maybe 15, did the Aussie exit back in and then had some nice clear water to myself. So just settled in and I knew Marcus wasn't far behind. So, I was like, I'm just going to go at a nice sustainable pace here and I'll start to pick it up towards the end, hoping that he would just sit on and draft. But he got caught up behind some people just before the Aussie exit. So actually, it turns out I was helping an imaginary person behind me, but helped me swim a bit better. Came out. I can't remember the time. Low 20 something. And then into transition, which was, quite a small transition. And for a mountain bike, you just stick your shoes on in transition, run out with your bike. And then out, and then the first part of the course, you're sort of weaving through the pavements and stuff. You have to go down and up an underpass where you had to get off your bike. So you run down steps with your bike, run back up. Then you're out along the cafes and restaurants, which would be nice to think everyone stood there cheering you on, but no one gave a shit. and then we're into that really steep hill before you head up onto the top of the mountains. Yeah, and the swim water was quite cool as well. So, it was really nice. You sort of just you just felt great because you're a little bit cold, and then you get onto the bike and it's like time to start warming up, and you're climbing up and it's really clear air, and you've got like a nice bit of wind, and the scenery around you is amazing, and you're like, actually, this is amazing. Yeah,
you get to really enjoy it for what it is in the moment, as opposed to reflecting on it afterwards.
Yeah. I didn't put a Garmin on my bike either, so I wasn't like stressed about any like heart rate data or anything like that. It's like, just ride, see what your legs can do. I was more like, you know me, not the best descender. So I was more worried about the sort of technical trail bit. But when you're coming into a trail section and someone's behind you, if they're, if you know they're going to be quicker than you or they've caught you up, you just let them through. So you go, or they just say coming through and you just move over. And like, same for me with other people on the second lap when we were starting to like catch people. I just say to them like, hey, no stress, I'm behind you, don't rush. Because if people try and rush to get out your way, they normally stack it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no rush, but when you're ready, I'm going to come past. And they just move out your way and through you go.
I guess on the second lap as well, you're catching slower swimmers and slower riders from the first.
Yeah, exactly.
First lap.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want them to fall just because you're trying to squeeze through to save 5 seconds, you know, when in the next corner you could come off.
Thinking about this type of race and how you approach it training wise and how you actually race it, do you prefer it to the other stuff, the traditional style of triathlon?
I think it's very different now because of the way I kind of approach things now. Whereas in the past, obviously I had such a focused goal that the way I was doing everything was the way I thought I had to do it. And probably the way I did have to do it in order to do what my goals were. Honestly, for this, I barely did anything specific. Mm. I think I ran off the bike like twice. I swam once a week on a Monday with you.
That's it.
Which was maximum we swam is like 1500 meters, which is the race distance.
I think our longest session was 43 minutes.
Yeah. So my approach is not say how I would train someone into it because it's very non-specific. And my week is built around just giving me as much energy and having as much fun as possible to complement alongside the work I do. Mm. And also to have a nice sort of home life as well. So yeah, you probably don't want to follow what I do into these kind of races. But the training for it is obviously because the way race is so shorter, like you don't have to stretch. There's no long run in your week really.
Yeah.
The long run maybe is like 90 minutes. I think I did an hour 20 the Sunday before. 2 weeks ago with Skinny, we did some hill reps. What I would say is if I'd known the run course, I probably would have done some more specific like power hiking, steep climbing sessions.
Really steep climb sections.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself while on the course, I was like, some weighted box step ups would be perfect for this. So like, you know, your sort of ultra leg type of stuff or some harder, like some threshold laps of the gym into some box step ups for 3-4 minutes would have been awesome training for this style of course. But Xterra courses change so much, you know. A man is like completely flat, but you need ankle stability because you're running over some stones and stuff.
Some new stones. Yeah.
So yeah, probably with more, you need to have a better course recce when doing Xterra training to understand the demands of the course. And the demands of the sport is that you need to be okay at riding and running at a bit of threshold and swimming at threshold. And roughly aim for, you're going to be out there for 3 to 4 hours.
I guess that's a good place to start, is like look at your threshold training, right? And
know
that these things, you're going to be at threshold.
Yeah, you should aim to be. And then obviously the technical side of it, like if you're on a technically demanding course, like a couple of people who qualified for Mulvano in Oman asked me, should they take a slot? I actually said no. Well, I didn't say no, but I told them what to expect and kind of framed it to them as in like, it's so vastly different to the course in Oman. Like you're riding downhill on a proper downhill mountain bike course for 7K. Like, and if it rains, you got wet rock, wet roots. Like it's really hard and not actually that enjoyable if you're technically not great for it. So I probably won't. If they move the venue, I think every 3 years.
Okay.
And like, I would not, I've been offered 2 more slots since last year. And I'm like, I'm not going because I didn't enjoy it. Right. And here you can't train for that kind of mountain biking because you just don't have, it's just not the same.
If you have nothing that's wet.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to change that, but nothing's as steep downhill with tree roots and rocks like it is there. So you have to think, what's the demand of the course? Whereas like road triathlon, you're never going to get that kind of variable. Maybe you're going to get a hillier one, or you know, windy one, or temperatures, but you can kind of always work around that.
Yeah.
So until they move the course, I wouldn't say people from here would, unless you've got a background in mountain biking, would go and enjoy that style of course. Because I literally rode uphill for 7K and walked down for 7K.
Terrifying. What's the gradient to get down in Italy?
Italy?
Yeah.
Be on my Training Peaks. But you're looking at like probably 10, 12% in some sections.
Descent, but then technical descent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a proper mountain bike course in the Pyrenees.
Yeah.
It's amazing. For a world championship, to find out who's the best, there's no better course. Because the pros, obviously, who are competing to be the best, it is mountain biking, and that is true mountain biking.
Yeah.
Climbing and descending.
It's no good done that hard. Quick.
Real quick, yeah. And a lot of them crashed. But even on this course in Greece, which was technically pretty, like it says moderate on the website, I'd say it was hard, technical. A lot of people at the sort of finishing line, and then the award ceremony with slings on and casts, some broken collarbones, some wrists. Yeah, still happened, yeah. So yeah, approach to training for me wasn't anything specific. If you live somewhere where you can mountain bike a lot, just go and mountain bike a lot and trail run a lot. That's what I would say.
So how do you look at doing this style of race? How do you look at the next race that you do of this format? How do you pick and choose? Do you look for elevation? Do you look for technicality? Do you look for...
I think these races are in some beautiful parts of the world. So actually I would start with location. Where do you want to go? Like, go to the Xterra website, have a look at the sort of, I think they have a whole map of where they go to. There's some insane locations, and I would literally pick it based off that, really.
Belgium. Yeah, Xterra Belgium. They've got, Spain, Italy, UK, Switzerland, Czech Republic, Spain again. France, Slovakia, Snowdonia.
Snowdonia's the trail run, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just the run.
So I'd start there. I think these aren't races to go and be, as an amateur, to go and be uber competitive at. I think you might get a bit disappointed if you're doing that. They're a race to go and enjoy in a beautiful location, and probably use it as something to push you a little bit outside your comfort zone, but have a lot of fun while doing it. Mm-hmm. That's how I would describe them. For me, I would definitely go back to Greece again next year. I'd love to go back with a few of the guys. We're getting more and more people on mountain bikes here now. Told a few of them, like, get ready, I'm taking you to Greece next year. So I would do that. And then, like I say, when they move the World Championships to a different venue, I'll probably try and just go to that again.
See a different World Championship course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just purely because it'll be somewhere else in the world. It's not going to be Oman or Greece, so...
I don't plan on moving house next year, so I should be able to make it.
Yeah. Like me and Marcus both said there, like, you'd absolutely love this kind of racing. Well, you loved Oman, didn't you? But this course suited you really well, because the trail run was obviously a lot of climbing and downhill. Mm. There wasn't a lot of flat running.
Which, levels it up. Well, takes the fast running out for me.
Yeah, so you'd have enjoyed that. You'd have been taking on a lot of people. There are a few people on the run, second loop, that just clearly had absolutely cooked themselves. And they were like slow motion hiking up the hill. It was good. It's always interesting to see how the pros race a course as well. Mm. And I just think, to give you a little bit of context of how good the pros are on these kind of races, for the run, which was 9.5 Ks, but had 300 meters of elevation in. And like I say, you are power hiking at points, 4 points on the course. They still run 38 minutes.
Wow.
Marcus and I was low 51, Marcus was high 51 minutes on that course. And Marcus is definitely a better hill runner and descender than I am. So yeah, 38 minutes.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And yeah, you think, I guess like the climbs, these guys are running up the climbs that you'd be power hiking.
I'd love to see it. I didn't see any footage. Hopefully they were filming, so there should be like a YouTube highlights coming out soon. I can't wait to see how they got up those hills.
Or is it just they're going that fast on the downhills?
They'll definitely be running fast downhills, for sure. But yeah, I'll be interested to see how they did
the
uphills.
To average that out though is wild.
It's insane, isn't it?
What about the bike? How much quicker are they on the bike?
About 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay, and the swim's probably only a few.
A bit closer, yeah. Yeah, 4 or 5 minutes there on the swim, but the bike. So we were 1 hour 47, 1 hour 50 something between us. And I think they were coming in at like 1 hour 20-ish.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, I can't wait to see the footage of them on the bike.
They descend and stuff.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, I think it's also a really fun race. And because the courses obviously have to be kept on off-road, they're a bit more compact, so they're good for viewing as well, like as a spectator. I think they're quite fun to go and spectate and watch.
And because they're fun, you don't mind that they're looped courses as such, because they are off-road, they're interesting, they're exciting. And if you go around the first lap and go, oh, I buggered this bit up. The second lap, you go, oh, remember I messed up this line on the first lap, I'm going to get it right the second lap or the third lap.
Yeah.
Remember that in Oman, lost some time there, someone overtook me. This time if I get the line right, I can go through it a lot quicker.
Yeah I was actually doing that, like obviously rode it on Friday, it's a bit of a recce. I was like, oh, I'm gonna struggle here. And then the first lap I had in my mind where I struggled on the Friday, and you like nail the corner and you're like, yes, like it's a really small micro goal but keeps you going. And then the second time round, you like do again, like you say, oh, I'm gonna get up this bit without putting my foot down, because there was like some parts where it was like steps of rock, and if you timed it wrong or you tried to pedal going over it, you'd catch your crank and you'd have to stop. You're like, okay, you need to like really power drive hard before it, and then almost like bunny hop up and then carry on. Like that's the smoother way of doing it. So the next lap comes around and you're like, oh yeah, okay,
here it is,
power hard, bunny hop, smooth. And then you're like,
yes,
you're celebrating. You're like, yes. And then, yeah,
and then mess the next bit up because you're celebrating.
yeah one-handed. So I think that's a really nice way. And I think what it does is it keeps your mind present. And again, this isn't like a show of saying how much better it is than road triathlon. There's other ways in road triathlon that you do that. You do it with feed stations, you do it with power targets, you do it with speed targets, but it's almost more self-discipline of doing that on a road try. Whereas these are like, you're forced to be present because you've got a 180 degree turn coming up and you've got a rock there, and if you fall over there, you're going down the side of a cliff. So you're pulled back into the moment a lot more, and you're only focused on what you're doing, not what others around you are going on. So I think that's what's really drawing me, or what drew me last year to this kind of race, is it's so polar opposite to what other triathlon are doing. And the kind of, if you're thinking like, well, what's the sort of message here? It's that there is you could love triathlon, but maybe you're falling out of love with what the road scene brings to you. And it's like, don't be afraid to say like, yeah, I'm not enjoying that anymore. Like this is a solution to being able to stay within triathlon, but have a whole different, it's like a whole another sport to do, which it kind of is. Like it's mountain totally. Biking, it's trail running, swimming's the same, but you don't have to train as much, which is a nice thing. But it's like there is other options, because I think there are a few people in that boat who are like, you know, you do an Ironman, it's like, what next? You know, are you willing to do more to get a better time? In which case, great, you're going to have a really fun 3-4 year journey of learning how fast can you get yourself to go over whatever distance you choose to on the road. And that is so fun, because every day you're getting better, or you're learning to be better, you're creating, you know, you're making yourself faster, you're making yourself more powerful. But there will come a point where it's like, what's the cost of me now improving again? And maybe you're there because, I mean, the best reasons, or the people who do it the longest, they're there because of a community. They're there because their friends do it. They're there because they have a bigger reason. It keeps them honest. It keeps them, you know, honest in their week with their nutrition, with their training. And I think if that's you, like, absolutely stick to the formula that's working for you. But if you're at that point where you're like not feeling motivated to enter more races, it's kind of like where you get to with marathons. Like, maybe you've done all the majors, or you've done as many as you want to do. It's kind of like, how do I keep running, which I love, but where do I find something that really interests me to keep going? A lot of people turn to trail running.
Yeah.
Like, I think these XTERRA races, which have been around a long time, but I think now they're getting a bit more eyes on them. You know, mountain biking is getting maybe a bit more, you might say, accessible. It's becoming, used to be this kind of like dark arts, you know, whereas now the bikes are becoming a little bit easier to work out and handle and buy and things. So potentially, yeah, XTERRA could be the answer.
And there's lots, I mean, even locally, you think, whenever I first came to the Middle East, you know, 15 years ago, nobody was mountain biking. And now every second person has a mountain bike in their bike collection.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
And it's just, you watch the development and how people progress, even just as a, not just our community, but as a wider community. And people want to go and explore and find these new things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And gravel racing's taken off as well, right? It's similar. And I don't know whether they do gravel triathlons, but I'm sure it can't be far away. But you still find yourself like, I haven't looked because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I was like, I wonder how many off-road Ironmans there are.
There are other, I can send you a website. I've looked at them already.
Yeah, don't, please. Yeah, it's good. And once if you've been training, you know, long distance triathlon for a long time, coming back to this kind of, like we're talking about, basically threshold training.
Yeah.
Is really fun. It's really, really fun.
It'd be interesting to see if you signed up now for a triathlon, how you'd feel, like, straight off the back of just doing what you've done. Would you be bored? Would you just be data focused? Would your mind wander? Would you be in the moment?
I think, yeah, if I was to sign up to one tomorrow, I would. And I started doing this towards the end of, you know, for example, what did I do last year? Roth. I stopped swimming with a watch, you know, removed the data there. Still biked with, but I didn't run. I ran with a watch, but it was only there for time.
Yeah.
Wasn't looking at pace. So I think actually I was drawn more towards that side.
Bit or less.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah. So I think I would carry that on. But you can't just say, it's working for me, so it'll work for you. I think everybody has to go through their sort of journey of, you know, sometimes data is the answer, right? And if you want to absolutely get the best out of yourself, then you've got to have the data to show you what's going on. But when you get to a point where you know how everything should feel, and you know that to get the most out of yourself, you actually just need to let yourself express yourself, because you've done everything you can and you've got enough experience to go without the data, then that's the time to remove the data. And that's why, you know, we have a job, because a good coach helps people understand that way. You know, use data to unlock the doors, but then use yourself in order to go and explore what's in the room. Right? The data, maybe could be a terrible analogy, but the data will get you to the door, but it can't tell you what's in the room. You have to go in and look for yourself. Does that work?
Maybe not. I like that. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, like, you buying a house now, you can go on a website and get a full 3D view of what's inside, right? You don't, like, you can buy this house without having to go and look at it, but you can't go there and feel like what it feels like with a light coming through that window. And yeah, you know, what are they like? What's the atmosphere of the neighborhood? Yeah. You have to go and figure it out yourself.
This is why, look, with all the data, the context is the key.
Yeah. Yeah. And for sure, there's people at these races with power meters on their mountain bike, and, you know, they knew exactly what splits they wanted to run and whatever. And like, absolutely no issue at all. It all depends why you're showing up and doing the race.
Yeah.
No aero helmet, so it's...
Would you ever get a power meter on your mountain bike?
I wrestle with the thought probably weekly. Yeah. Because part of my brain of thinking is like, oh, well, I should probably know what the true stress of my training is. But then I remind myself, like, one of the things I love about the mountain bike is
that it doesn't have it.
There is no data. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll probably have one by September.
It's more for, I think, more like post-ride curiosity. Like some of the climbs that we do, I always wonder, I wonder what watts we're putting.
Yeah, exactly. I think about that.
But I wouldn't let it dictate an effort or heart. It'd be more like look afterwards for curiosity, I think, than in the moment.
Yeah, which is what it should really be for, right? I think you can't, especially on a mountain bike, even if you look, you glance at your Garmin, you might, you know, miss a rock or whatever.
Yeah.
And come off. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of am falling back to that sort of data because even, you know, time is data. So going and riding like Jebel Yannis, I'm like, okay, I did that in an hour and whatever. I'm still...
You're always comparing to that, that time.
Still 50 whatever minutes off the winner. Now, what's motivating me to go there and try and get the KOM? Well, it's an external factor of trying to be the KOM of that mountain, which that's what data is back to us. But and someone asked me this the other day, it was like, how do you keep yourself internally, or how do you keep yourself driven? And I think, and it was a morning where I'd woken up at 4, I'd, you know, walked the dogs, done my admin, set off early, driven there, done the climb. I wasn't meeting anyone there, didn't tell anyone I was going, rode it completely on my own, came back down, had a call at 9, did that in the car on the way back. And it was like, if I'm only externally driven, that doesn't happen. So still, you've got to have your internal drive. And if you want to use something external to get that internal drive moving, then that's okay. But don't only have it as external, because then you show up and if the wind was in the wrong direction or the temperature wasn't what you thought it was and you thought there's no chance I'm going to do this, so I'm not going to even try, then you've let the external factor overtake you and dictate you. So the internal drive has to be, I just want to give it my best shot. And for me, it was like, this is the only day or only morning this week that I have uninterrupted, like clear, just go and see what's in the legs time. So that's what I'm actually here for, to do, is just to absolutely melt myself up this mountain. And the carrot on the stick is to see if I can beat the time.
It's interesting. When you say that, it brings you back to a conversation that you had after you came back from Kenya. And you said that when the pros are running, if they fall off on a rep, then the session is done.
Yeah.
Stop, because they know that they're not running at the pace that they should be running to achieve X, Y, Z goal. But when we do it as amateur, or when that happens as an amateur athlete, if you don't hit your target pace, instead of just stopping, just dial it back and still run hard, but run hard in the moment, as opposed to stressing about the paces or the...
Yeah.
If you knew you were off by 5 seconds, would you can the whole thing in?
Exactly.
You'd keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
As hard as you could.
Yeah. You just ride as hard as you could. Now, that's because I don't know what time I'm supposed to be at certain areas on the mountain, because I've not purposely not sat down and given myself checkpoints to hit. Like, I just want to go and truly give a best effort and see what comes out of it.
How good it is.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's why a lot of, like, still finding myself racing, because it gets the best out of me. It makes me be who I want to be at home. It gets me to be, like, what I find as being fun. So I use it as a way to set me up to win. I don't use the race as, if it goes well, then I win. Like, even if I'd had a terrible race, it would have still been a great experience.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing it for the right reasons. It's not who I am anymore.
It wasn't all resting on the race.
Yeah.
But the race was sort of a part of the puzzle, if you like. I bet it was an equal part of all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Too many analogies today. Christ, loads, throwing them out.
Loads. Like Christmas time with all the puzzles. And I think you're very good at this as well, mate. Like, you've done it for years. You just pick races that you're really excited to go and do. And none of them actually mean a great deal to you in terms of time and stuff like that. And I think when you have, you maybe talk more to this, but when you set yourself up with the pressure of a sub-3 marathon, or what did you try and do? Was it Backyard?
What did I try and do? It was a
24-hour record, not record, but was it in Ireland?
Oh,
that
yes.
Time in Ireland?
Yeah. It was the 20 qualified for Team GB 24-hour.
Yeah. So when you've set yourself up with some pressure.
It was a 240, 24-hour run.
Right.
240K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, how did that, how's it gone for you?
Any time I've tried to set a time-based performance goal or a distance-based performance goal, there's only one time when it's paid off.
Which time?
UTMB. So the sub 30 hour.
Yeah.
And even at halfway, well, I thought it wasn't on, but yeah, that's the only time it's ever come to fruition.
And that, again, doesn't mean it's right or wrong for anyone, but for you and the kind of person that you are anyway, like your personality is not a conformist.
Mm.
So trying to get yourself to conform to like this time equals this result or this feeling for myself is, it's not going to work for you.
I often wonder, could I trick myself?
How?
Into not. So the problem is though, you'd take on the challenge or the goal with an intention, but then you obviously need a second intention, which might be time or distance based. And then, but not focus on that, focus on part A, not part B. And part B would be a subsequent. But then I would always think about part B instead of part A.
Yeah.
And I'd be too much pressure.
Internal pressure or external?
I think I put pressure on myself.
Yeah.
I think I used to think I'd think it would come from the outside, but I think it's all internal. If I set myself, let's take the sub 3 hour marathon. If I set myself a sub 3 hour marathon, all I think about is the time when I'm not thinking about anything else, or should I think about it too much?
Right.
Not because of what anyone else thinks, because I thought about this a lot. I don't, that doesn't drive me. But if I let myself down in a session, I think about the end goal and the consequences that might have, when really I shouldn't. That doesn't drive me as well.
Sometimes pressure though, isn't, you're not driven by external factors, but you can be still pressured by them. Because maybe it doesn't drive you, but it might suppress you. So it's like, for example, 3 hour marathon is like, and this, go back to my own, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but 2 years ago, qualifying for Kona made me, in my head, a good coach, because I believed that other people believed that a good triathlon coach should have gone to Kona. So by not being able to achieve that, it was actually suppressing me, wasn't driving me. Because driving you should help you to be moving forward.
Yes.
But actually, by thinking that, I was holding myself back. So maybe for listeners thinking about this, even draw it out. Like, what are you not doing because you're worried about what people are saying or thinking? Like, you're even assuming what people are thinking about you.
Yeah.
You don't actually even know it.
Yeah.
If my thoughts of going to Kona makes me a better triathlon coach, how many interactions have I had with people where I'm assuming in their head I'm not good enough coach because I've not been to Kona? So how many people have I spoke to not being truly who I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm acting in a way of like, you know, so, you know, what are you as a coach? Oh, well, I've got a sports science degree. I've done this race, qualified here, or I've raced this in the UK, I did this race, but actually what all I want to say is, yeah, I'm a good coach because I've been to Kona. That's a much simpler answer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not actually they may not be thinking it at all. They're probably thinking, how does this person make me feel during an interaction?
And or are you thinking, is the person looking at you and going, he hasn't been to Kona? He's not a good coach.
They're probably not even thinking about it.
Not at all.
But you're thinking about it because that's what you've put in your mind.
Yeah.
So once you've realized that like Kona's got nothing to do with coaching, or running a sub 3 marathon has nothing to do with your ability to coach running, then you don't act like that with other people either.
No.
And you think if you're looking for someone,
the external pressure is gone.
It's gone. Because you don't feel a pressure, because you always look other people, you always assume other people through your own eyes,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you can't be in the other person's head. It's impossible. unless you have a nice, clear conversation of like, and this is what we do really well here, is like, what are you looking for in a coach? And if you're looking for a coach who's run sub three, why? What do you think that coach has that, for example, I don't? Or what do you think a coach who's been to Kona has that I don't? Well, I want to go to Kona and I want a coach who knows the conditions at Kona. Okay, I went in 2017 to support someone. I know exactly the conditions.
I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, no, but I want to know that the person's actually raced it. Okay, then it's not me. Not, I'm cool with that.
We get this a lot with, I think, mostly new people that are new to our community that have assumed that they will not be fast enough to run with the group.
Yeah.
I actually had a call with someone this morning who was said the exact same thing. They said, my ability to run is perhaps 200 meters before I have to start walking.
Yeah.
Could I still come to the Track Tuesday session? Like, yes, but we will make it a different session for you. You can warm up with us. We can do the drills and then we do something different.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Well, will people not like look at me and think I'm weird? Absolutely not.
No one cares.
No one cares. Yeah. All they care about is their own session and how hard they're running.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always easier said than done in these situations. And yeah. I always think, when I always say this to people when they're kind of asking me around it for themselves, is like, if you're on a path and you truly believe what you need to do is the right thing for you, don't let anyone else tell you that it's not the way. Because it is probably the way for you, if you truly believe it. But if you're sat there thinking, I want to run all five major marathons because people will look at me in a better way, like understand that when you finish your last major marathon, no one's going to look at you any different.
No.
Nothing's going to change.
The ladder sixth as well.
You know, it's how are you? Who are you as a person? How do you act? How do you make others feel around you?
Yeah.
That's where it's important to understand what you're actually doing. Like, just enjoy it. You'll figure it out as you go. I think that's where this off-road style has helped me so much. It's because actually just... I don't love swimming, but I enjoy biking and running, and swimming's the sort of, you have to buy in, right? So actually I do love it because I love what comes after it. Yeah. And I thought I'd stop loving triathlon, but I've actually figured out this style is, I still love it.
When you're swimming, when you're in the race and you're swimming, I know you enjoyed it at the time, but are you thinking about what's to come, or are you thinking about the swim?
I'm only thinking of the swim.
He's only thinking of the swim. Yeah. You're not like getting excited about the bike incoming.
No, I'm thinking, what's my stroke feel like? What's around me? Am I swimming in the right direction? And then towards the back end, I start going through transition in my head of like, okay, exit, run, pull your wetsuit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not at all thinking about what's coming.
Okay.
Yeah. You're thinking of what's coming.
Quite often.
Well, you beat me in a man, so maybe that's what they should be doing. But yeah, to draw it back full circle, and I wrote an article on my website from the weekend, or sort of a race report, if you like, and someone messaged me and just said, it's really like, I love to hear this because it was all about fun. Mm. And they're like, I love training triathlon, but racing absolutely cripples me through anxiety. And this is, reading this makes me realize that, like, I can still train triathlon, but I don't need to enter races and put the pressure on myself. Whereas sometimes when you've got race entries, or you've bought the race bike, you've bought the kit that you want to race in, but then you don't race, like, that's a feeling of guilt, or like, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't even train because I'm not going to do a triathlon. So therefore I can't identify as a triathlete. And this is what we would call a performance identity. So you're basing your identity off a performance, which is exactly what we've just talked about with, run coaches doing sub three, or triathlon coaches going to Kona. Is you're basing your identity as a coach off what you can do as an athlete, which is a performance identity. Whereas actually your identity should be like just open, you as a person. Like if your triathlon training in your week helps you show up to work and be a really good boss or employee or whatever, then absolutely triathlon training is the right thing for you. If it helps you get home and switch off from the day and become a really good family person, like, you don't need to go and enter a race to put it all to justice. You're doing it every single day. You're showing yourself, you're doing the right thing. So I would look at it like that. And the minute the training starts making you not a better person, is the time to call it a day.
Yeah, definitely.
And it can come back. You might call it a day for a month and it can come back in a different time. Like, there's no hard and fast rules for it, which I think quite a few people are stuck in that, you know?
And quite a lot of people don't enjoy the training that they're doing because they, like you say, they have this identity that they are a triathlete or a marathon runner or an ultra runner. And they would almost feel that say you take someone who runs 100Ks, they might feel like a 5K is beneath them.
Yeah.
Like, why would I run a 5K? I'm an ultra runner. That's my identity. You can.
Yeah. Why would I come to track? I'm an ultra. It's like, track's the absolute best thing for you.
100%. I ran with me and Kev ran this morning. He was going to run himself around ranches. And I was like, why don't you come up at 5? Me, Jess, and Skinny will all run. Skinny will leave us. Three of us will run together and we'll have a good time. And it's like, brilliant. Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Yeah. Whereas he perhaps would have not had a great run if he was on his own, but instead track.
Exactly. Great session. Hey, we're helping a lot of people today, I hope. Reminds me to go back and listen to the show we did with Dr. Tom Carenza, also known as Dr. Tom Wright, who we're actually doing a 4-part series where he talks you through the show. So if you want to start learning a bit more maybe about yourself or what are you working towards, this is the first show of it. Can't remember the number of it. Should have looked, but scroll back through. You'll see Dr. Tom Carenza. And make sure you have a notepad and pen ready for it. And we're going to continue. The next one will come out in about a month or so. And then we have 2 more shows for the end of the year. And it's all about this, essentially. It's like figuring out what you're going towards and why you're going there towards it. You're looking at the number like a...
Episode 217.
There you go. We've done a lot of shows, huh? Good. Mate, ITD is coming.
ITD.
You ready?
It's not an event. It's a training.
It's training session.
Training night. Yeah. ITD, 50K ride, 50K run, 50K ride. Highlight of the year, I think. I really enjoy that night. I enjoy doing it. Either from the coach, you're doing it.
Yeah.
Marcus will do it. I'll do it. Jess won't do it. Steph.
Steph
to ride a lap. I don't think he's ever ridden a lap. Skinny will do it.
Skinny's on it. He'll be dad life by then.
And then we have some of the performance coaches also doing a relay.
Some words are being said. Some of them want to do it solo, but together. Some of them want to do it as a relay.
Okay, and we also have Krios.
Krios.
Our head of facilities.
Head of all things clean.
Head of all things clean. He's also going to be doing it.
Who nearly went to the CrossFit semifinals. He's an absolute weapon.
Absolute weapon. And then the following week, athletes will be doing it.
Good month ahead.
A whole host of distances. It's too hard to keep track of what's going on that night.
Don't try. But exciting month ahead. Then end of year social. And then summertime, which gets you even more excited because you're all heading to Chamonix.
You're heading to Chamonix for our trail camp. And then the Peak District for anyone in the UK.
That peaks of interest.
Peaks of interest. We've actually, we've got, I think, on the list, 28 people on the list for Chamonix so far.
It's like you're going to shrink the mountain with that many people on there.
Yeah, right? I'm going to need to, I don't know, maybe have to let the government know at this rate.
Solid. And yeah, summer, not a lot else happening through summer. We'll continue to train as normal. Ready for the fresh new season on the way.
Fresh season.
Fresh season. If you're listening... And you, that sounds all like a lot of fun. Rob Jones here has an answer for you in the Start to Run program, which you're actually revamping into also a 90-day
I am
plan, right?
It will be revamped so that you have 90 days of consistent movement. No rest days. People want 90 days of movement.
Yeah, but it's not like you're going to be cooked.
No.
It's like, it's going to be walks and things like that.
90 days of structure. But the idea is that if you want to get into fitness running, you want to make sustainable change, then doing a little little and often is obviously better than doing bouts with rest days in between when you perhaps don't need them, and it give you more momentum. So there will be walks, runs, strength, mobility, cycling if you want it.
Philosophy, yeah, podcast,
core work, podcast, learning, everything.
Amazing. We also have two, if you're looking for some strength through the summer, obviously the heat steps up here in Dubai, or maybe you're somewhere else in the world, we have the Run Strong program, which is now 5 years old.
Wow. It does not need revamped.
No, I'm still delivering it. People are still getting results stronger from it.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's 6 months worth of strength work, but you don't have to buy all 6 months. You can buy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 months.
What's your favorite month? I know mine.
Month three is pretty good.
Yeah.
You're into some stability, posture, power.
Yeah. I like the power.
Yeah. Power's good.
I like
power.
Four. Four's my fave.
Yeah, four's good. If you buy month two, you actually get 4 sessions a week because you get stability as one, posture as one, power as one, and flexibility as another.
And then you actually add strength. You add in, when you get to month four, you add strength in, and stability and posture combine.
Yeah.
Because you've already built that stable base and your posture should be good if you work through month one, two, and three.
Banging. Yeah, that's bulletproof program. If you would like that, you need to go to the Training Peaks store. Google Training Peaks store, search Run Strong, and you'll find it there. If you want me to send you a link to it, email twinafight.com. Cycle Strong is also now out. Ooh. It's been out for a while, 6 months or so. This program is for cyclists looking to increase their power and strength on the bike. It is not a cycling program, although there are some cycling sessions in there to help transfer the power that you're going to create or the strength you're going to create in the gym over to the bike. But it is a 2 day a week strength session with 2 accessory sessions in there. So 4 strength sessions a week and 1 optional ride, as I said, that helps just to transfer what you're creating in the gym over to the bike. So this is an off season strength program for cyclists and triathletes.
Excellent.
Be prepared to get a little bit sore and very swole. That's the tagline for that.
That's it. We've been going too long. Let's stop.
Done. Done.
Done.
If you've made it to here, we thank you.
Hit the button. Finish it.
Nutrition show next week with Abby.
Abby Coleman.
Very good one.
Tune in. Looking forward to it.